This is the Frogcast.
Hello and welcome to the Frogcast. We are here ready to talk about TCU's Big Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, where we will be taking on the Oregon Ducks. The regular season has come to an end. The playoff card has been set. And while TCU did not make the playoffs, we have to say we are excited to be 10-2 going into the Alamo Bowl down in San Antonio and get to play a national brand like the University of Oregon, who last year were playing for the national championship, who have had Heisman Trophy winners, have coaches that everybody desires, that's bloated and funded by Nike, and we get to take them on January 2nd in San Antonio at the Alamo Bowl. Trey, I know we both had high hopes for the Frogs this year, but to see this card set in the Alamo Bowl, what is your response to seeing the Frogs take on the Ducks?
Personally, I'm excited. I guess one of the biggest reasons why I'm excited is, you know, it's in San Antonio. I can easily drive to that game. I've already got my hotel booked, you know, put my order in through TCU for my tickets. My wife and I are going to go down and hit that up. So I'm excited about that. But like you mentioned, playing Oregon, you know, if I wasn't a TCU fan, I feel like I'd probably maybe be an Oregon fan. I like how they play the game. I really like all their uniforms, the whole Nike thing. I think that's cool. I think, you know, there is some similarities kind of between the programs. You know, Oregon was really nothing, you know, back in, I guess, kind of in the 80s. And then they started, you know, picking it up. And, you know, now they're, you know, a nationally known team. You know, I've played for national titles, haven't won one yet, but I just like them. I think it's a good matchup. I think it's the best matchup outside of the, you know, the six big New Year's game. So I'm excited for it, man, and I think it's going to be a really entertaining game to watch.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I'm looking forward to watching this game. Daniel, you've been a long-suffering Frog fan. What's it like to know that TCU kind of underachieved for our expectations but still gets to go to a bowl like this and still gets to play a national brand like this?
It's pretty crazy because, you know, of course, based on the expectations, at the beginning of the year, I'm thinking, you know, we're going to get at least a New Year's Six bowl, and that's what I thought, and then everything happened. So my expectations for the season, you know, few games in to midway through, you know, I was going to be happy to, you know, make the Texas Bowl or whatever. But here we are, you know, going to the Alamo Bowl, which, like Trey said, that's really close. It's like, what, 4 hours or so away? I haven't set up my reservations and stuff yet. I'm not positive I can even go. But at least it's not Orlando or, you know, somewhere that's just too far for me. But yeah, Oregon, that's a great program. They, you know, I think I'd be an Oregon fan too, because I just like their style. You know, they've got the high tempo, the spread, and, you know, all their crazy uniforms that, you know, a lot of, but they're not just flash and style. They've really actually a really good team. I think, the programs are comparable, but I think ours is so much better because of the defense. I think the Oregon doesn't play defense nearly as well, but it's definitely an exciting matchup. And I think, I don't know, there are other ones, I guess, because of the playoff itself, which, you know, the semis then will lead to the final. Yeah, that's a big deal. But just looking down the list, all the games don't really seem that exciting. But you see TCU Oregon, and it's like, damn, that looks awesome. So I kind of think it's, in a lot of ways, sort of the most intriguing game out of the whole, out of the bigger bowls.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is one of those games that just grabs your attention that you have to watch. You know, being a long time and sometimes long suffering TCU fan, I just want to walk you through a historical chronology here. 06, 08, as well as 2011, TCU was 10-2 all three of those years. And all three of those years, their 10-2 record got them to the Poinsettia Bowl. And so we have come a long way from the Mountain West, where we would win 10 games and then have to go play on some random Tuesday night on December 22nd
in front of like 9,000 people out in San Diego. We don't have to do that. We get a nice time slot. We get a great brand. We get a great team, and our players get rewarded in a high profile game. So this is good. When I think about the reasons I used to want to be in the Big 12, to be honest, this is one of those reasons to play, even when you're not playing in the biggest of bowls, to play after Christmas, to be on a national stage and get to play another good team that really, really wants to be there. We'll probably end up doing another episode here before the bowl game to break it down, but we just got to be reminded here. Oregon is 9-3. They are on a great run, having beaten Washington, Arizona State, Cal, Stanford, USC, and then Oregon State to close out the season. And that is a heck of a lineup. And they battled some quarterback injuries at the beginning of the year, like we did at the end of the year. And so they're coming in hungry as well. So I'm going to agree with both what Trey and Daniel said, which is this is the marquee non-New Year's Six Bowl. It's bigger than and better than some of the New Year's Six Bowls. People are going to watch this because people like Oregon and people like TCU. Well, there was a game played on Saturday down in Waco at 11 o'clock that we'd already kind of agreed on that we would watch and that we would hash over, thinking it would simply confirm that Baylor was going to make their way to the Sugar Bowl. Well, wouldn't you know it, Baylor gets beat by Texas, 23-17. Charlie Strong has two wins over top 15 teams, including a team that is going into the playoff from the Big 12 in Oklahoma, even though they go 5-7. Trey, you watched, you said, the Baylor and Texas game. Take a moment and just delight in the suffering of other people. What was it like to watch Baylor kind of go down against Texas here at the end of the season?
Well, watching Baylor lose any game is always fun and entertaining. But this was great just because, you know, you look at their message board, you see on Twitter, they're getting hyped up for, you know, a Sugar Bowl, booking hotels in New Orleans. Saw a couple examples of, you know, Baylor fans still salty that they lost to TCU, but saying, you know, good luck in the, you know, Russell Athletic Bowl, which is so awesome that they ended up in that bowl. So it's just awesome that they lost. I mean, for me, it was just, I did not want to see them make a New Year's Six bowl game. So for them not to make it in pleasures me greatly, and I hope North Carolina kicks their ass.
Yeah, a hearty amen from me.
I mean, I'm all about the Big 12. Like, I hope the conference shows out well, you know, and wins their bowl games, but I don't care. I want Baylor to lose any game in any sport they ever play. So
that's what makes you a TCU fan, Trey. I love it.
Yeah, I want the conference to be good, but forget it. If that means Baylor has to win, then
I am afraid, though, that Daniel's hatred trumps yours.
Yeah, he's dedicated.
He is dedicated. What did you think about the Texas game, Daniel?
That was awesome. I didn't – actually, that morning, I was kind of just half asleep before I woke up, and I had some quasi-dream that – I wasn't paying attention to the game, and all of a sudden, I check on it, and Texas is way up. And then I actually, when I woke up and had coffee and everything, I was like, what an idiot, that's not going to happen. But then it did. It's just like, I'm blown away. It's not so much that Texas was able to stop Baylor, but that Texas is able to score at all. And as much as crappy as Baylor's defense is, they can stop Texas. They're absolutely awful. And I don't know. I mean, they can use the quarterback excuse all they want after Chris Johnson went out, which they shouldn't. I don't think they should have been running him if he's your third string. Good Lord. And so he gets hurt, and then they bring in that guy whose name is a cat. And then
Felix Hawthorne, Latrix Hawthorne.
Lynx, yeah.
Yeah, Lynx. That's Lynx. Right, Lynx. Yeah, Lynx. Come here.
I know. What kind of name is it? Anyway. But with their running game, with their offensive line and the way they cheat running down the field, and then the running backs they have, I don't think the quarterback should be that much of an excuse. As far as their game's concerned, of course, you can just stack the box and everything, but it was unbelievable. And then how Baylor, you know, kind of came back. Texas was kind of falling apart. And I'm surprised the cops weren't called. I was screaming and yelling, and it was just the pleasure you can get from watching Baylor lose is indescribable, I guess.
You should bottle that and sell it on the corner of like West 7th or something like that. Yeah, the thing, I'm going to piggyback on what Trey said, and I'm going to stand up for the Russell Athletic Bowl. Orlando in January is really nice. Orlando in late December is really nice. There's nothing wrong with Orlando, and everybody that's got a little kid wants to go to that bowl game. You can take your family to that bowl game because you can go to Disney. There's not a damn thing wrong with that bowl, but Baylor was talking about it like we were going to the Sun Bowl, and it got moved to Juarez or something. I mean, like, people were – I mean, they were just so delighted that they got the awkward tiebreaker in the Big 12 arrangement. But the little thing was, you had to win that last game, which they found a way to not do against the team that we beat 50-7. And Baylor delight, Baylor tears are enjoyable to watch.
And that's just a great testament to their little spoiled brat, new money attitude that, you know, if you watch, like, when I watched them in the Fiesta Bowl, I could tell their fans knew absolutely nothing about sports, just based on their reactions to everything, and it always comes to my mind. But then in the next couple of years, as they continued success, they kind of understood things more. But now they're so freaking spoiled with just winning big time and trash talking and all that. Here they get a loss or a non-win, and now everything's just so beneath them. This is just garbage, and I'm sure they're blaming everybody. And I don't know. It's just unreal. It's not the worst.
It's not the worst. There's nothing wrong with going to the Russell Athletic Bowl. I hope everybody in the Big 12 does well except for them. Well, speaking of the Big 12, guys, we don't have to listen all year that the Big 12 didn't make the playoff. I wish it would have been us, but it is Oklahoma, who I think has as good a chance as anybody at winning it. Final Four got selected, and we have Clemson playing Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, and then we have Bama playing Michigan State in the Cotton Bowl. And the winner of that, of course, plays for the national championship a week and a half later. Guys, I went back and tried to listen, and I couldn't find the episode. It must have been the first or the second. I only had so much time this afternoon to see who we picked at the beginning of the season. And I'm glad I didn't find it, because I don't think any of the four of us had these four teams in the playoff. But, Trey, when you look at this four-team playoff that's set, who has to be the favorite going into this? And if you had to pick one team to win it all, who would it be?
Well, my personal opinion is I think Oklahoma has a good shot at winning it. And I've seen tweets from, you know, people connected to Vegas and the sports books and stuff, you know, that say, you know, that Oklahoma, I guess, is, you know, one of the top out of the four, one of the favorites. And I think maybe I even saw that they were open maybe as a couple point favorite over Clemson. So I think they have a good shot at winning it. That's who I kind of hope wins it. Really, honestly, I want anybody but Alabama to win it. And I think in our first episode, I want to say my four was Ohio State, Alabama, TCU, and Clemson. So I guess I got two out of the four right. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you were going to bring it up. We kind of talked about it in our pre-show meeting, but the Big 12 is just, I don't know. I mean, if Stanford doesn't lose to one of their games, if Stanford only has one loss, I think Oklahoma gets left out.
Honestly. I do too, man.
So I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, they're lucky to get in this year, but man, I don't know. I still think it's looking like they really value that championship game for whatever it's worth. I mean, I think I like our system. I like playing every team. I mean, Iowa didn't play half the damn good teams in their conference, and they really had to play that one game at the end against Michigan State. I don't know. I think it's kind of dumb. I don't think they give the Big 12 enough credit. So whatever. I don't know.
No,
I'm glad Oklahoma got in, I guess. So
yeah, I'm glad Oklahoma got in, and we'll come to Daniel and me, and then I want to hash out at length what you said about the Big 12, because I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, on both things, I think we're getting screwed, and I really like a 19 round robin. But you know who's your favorite going into the Final Four here, Daniel? Who do you pick between Clemson, OU, Bama, and State?
I'm hoping for Oklahoma. I think they got as good a chance as pretty much anybody. I mean, Alabama's always hard to tell because they always have some game where they don't play worth a crap, and then, you know, or they just look overrated, and then they have other games where they just dominate. So, and then with Oklahoma, see, and against Clemson, I haven't really analyzed that. I thought about Oklahoma and Alabama, and I think the spread that Oklahoma does probably just, you know, takes care of Alabama, even as good as their defense is. But I don't know. I think Oklahoma is who has got as good a chance as anybody, and I hope that's who it is, because maybe ESPN will shut their face if the Big 12 can win it, because they can't keep just saying, oh, how weak we are if they win at all.
Yeah, I'm pulling for OU. I mean, you just have to. You know, we're not SEC homers. We're like Aggies. Think we get credit for the national championship that Bama wins, but I want OU to win. I think they're the best team going into it. I think if Lincoln Riley's smart enough to run the ball, they're gonna win. Just give the ball to Earl Campbell Jr. there and P. Ryan. I think they're gonna be in great shape. And we've seen Alabama has a hard time with the spread. So if they can beat Clemson, which I do think they can do, I think they got a great shot against Alabama, because that team that was 10-2 a couple of years ago went to the Sugar Bowl and beat Alabama. I don't see any reason why they can't do it again. And he's not our coach, and so we probably aren't endeared to him. But Bob Stoops is probably pissed off about the last couple of years. Everybody thinks he was washed up. I think he was ready to end all that conversation this year, and he's been a pretty darn good job doing it. But I'm going to agree with you, Trey, to loop back around here. If Stanford had one loss, even if it had been against Northwestern, I think we're out because of this damn championship game. I mean, I think it's great that we play everybody. I would rather have a true conference champion, and the champion is determined by the fact that they have the best record of everybody. But for some reason, they think like some 14-team league where you get to skip a third to two-thirds of the other half of the division somehow elevates you. And it anybody that can look at that math will tell you it waters it down and bloats the middle of your conference and makes you look better than you really are. And it's infuriating to me. But I don't think OU's not in. OU's not in if Stanford has one loss. And they didn't get in because they're OU this year. They got in because other people lost. And I can't stand that our conference is basing that. I can't stand that that's what it gets based on. And it bothers me. So that just opens up. I'm going to put a cap on this at 2 minutes. Do we need to expand just to suck it up so we can meet the demands of the stupid committee?
Is it so much the championship game or just having an actual champion unlike last year?
You know, I don't know. I mean, like, if we had, co-champions, whatever the heck that was last year, I wish it would have been us, but if they'd have picked Baylor and just said they passed the eye test, that's fine by me. I just think that's not their measuring stick. I think they somehow have all of this value placed on the 13th data point, as if somehow adding an FCS team in November, like every SEC team does, which is essentially a bye week, getting ready for your rivalry game, getting ready for the championship game, makes you better. And I sound like Joel Klatt, but that seems to be their – that's what they've bought into. They believe that, and so we might have to operate underneath the belief of that. What do you think about that, Trey?
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. I feel like the BCS system benefited the SEC, and this new playoff system has really started benefiting the Big Ten.
That's good.
It's kind of funny how that's working out. But I mean, I almost feel like the Big 12 is kind of in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation, because if they sit still, people will be like, well, y'all don't have a championship game. But if they go add two teams, they're going to be, you know, downplaying the two teams that, you know, whoever the two are that the Big 12 added, yeah. They'll be, you know, Memphis or whoever, they'll be like, well, they're just, you know, they're not any good. So, you know, who cares? So I don't know. I think we're in a tough situation, but I'm almost getting to the point where I think that the conference does need to do that. I mean, I guess we'll see next year, you know, how it all shakes out. But I just think they're kind of in a tough spot right now.
Yeah, I think they are too. And I just think we have to suck it up for the good of the cause, man. If people don't like essentially a mid-major, but everybody else has added mid-majors other than the SEC adding Missouri and A&M, who are, you know, quality programs. But why does the Big Ten get puffed up in this? That's a great point, Trey. Why do they get puffed up adding Rutgers and Maryland? Because you're Iowa. You play the West, which is weak. I would pick seven teams in the Big 12 to beat Iowa on a neutral field. And the teams they draw out of the East are Maryland and Rutgers, and then they get to play the watered-down West. That's just not fair. I mean, that's the only way to put it. That is bullcrap that they are basically one play away from being in the playoff. And when you get in this spot, having played and having coached and having followed college football, that's just one game for the rest of your life. I mean, like, that all you got to do is get up for one game, and anybody can beat anybody in a Power 5 situation like that. And damn, Iowa almost got in, and that would have been an atrocity, because that is not a good football team. I would take Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, Baylor, West Virginia, Tech, over, and probably Kansas State with a healthy quarterback over them on a neutral field. That's just my put down of the Hawkeyes, that I think are a below average program. They're not any better than they were last year. Things just broke their way. So, all right, enough of that rant. You guys, some questions here. We're going to do these kind of hot potato. I'm going to give you a question that we have worked on this week. You give me your answer, and then we're going to move on to the next one. So, Daniel, I'm going to start with you with the simplest softball question that I could ask you to summarize the TCU season. These are all going to be about the Frogs this year. Who is your offensive MVP this season, and why?
I think I'll have to go with Boykin.
Good answer.
I don't think there's much... much explanation needed there. If it wasn't him, I would say Dotson, maybe Turpin, but it's Boykin by a mile.
Yeah, it's got to be Boykin in a mile. And I don't know when you guys will be listening to this, but we should just all be prepared for the atrocity that he will not be invited to the Heisman Trophy presentation, even though he should be. So, Trey, what's the one moment this year where you just kind of stood up and went, wow? What was like the blow-you-away moment of the entire season?
Yeah, there was a couple for me. It was hard for me to narrow it down, but I kind of had, I guess, three, if you want to say that. One was beating Texas 50-7. To me, you know, I don't care how down Texas is and, you know, what shape of their team or their program is in, when you crush them like that, I was like, wow, honestly, I did not expect that. Thought it was awesome. Love it. I've got so many family members that are Longhorns. So that's always great. The other one, obviously, Boykin against West Virginia, misplay where Holgorsen high-fived him on the sideline. Loved that. And Josh Dotson, just in general, I couldn't narrow down like one specific catch that I said wow on, but that dude's awesome. And I really can't wait to see what he can do in the NFL, because he seems to have the size, speed, ability to be something special. So those were kind of the three things that really made me say wow this year.
Yeah, funny moment. I got a teenager who's a sophomore in high school that has really bought in and followed the Frogs, and he looked at me at the end of the season and said, remember that play where Boykin threw it to the corner and Dotson went up and caught it, you know, with two hands way above his head, and then turned his body and then turned around and stared at the corner who walked off to the sideline? And I just kind of stared at him because I thought of like 15 plays, and he just started laughing. And he's like, "That happened like three times every game." And that's just, yeah, that's
boy. I mean, you could put a highlight reel together that would be 10 minutes long just of his catches. I mean, he's incredible.
He is, and there is something about, you know, that the way he carries himself that is so confident. It's not cocky. It's not arrogant. It's not trash. But it's like, yeah, I just did that, and I'm going to do it again, so you better get ready. I love that. I hope he plays in the Alamo Bowl. Yeah.
That would be nice.
That would be nice, man. Well, Daniel, what maybe a game that you were watching at home or a game where you were at Amon Carver, what moment made you like want to throw your phone across the room or across the stadium or unleash on a rant of not safe for work phrases? What was kind of the holy crap, I can't believe this crap just happened moment for you?
That's tough. I'd say early in the season it happened about 10 times a game. It's hard to put it on. I'm trying to think of something super specific, but I remember being super frustrated during Kansas State and how they just ran us over like it was nothing. And just any game we struggled in like Texas Tech, but at least, you know, they have an offense, unlike K-State. And just any time there were stupid plays, like Josh Caraway, the master of roughing the passer and such. So, yeah, it's stuff like that. I'm trying to think. I feel like there was one that really stands out, but for some reason I'm drawing a blank. But it's moments like that where I think there was one moment where I threw my computer. I'm trying to.
I remember watching the SMU game.
Maybe, yeah.
That was like the darkest moment of the season. I mean, other than Josh Doxson, you know, busted up against Oklahoma State, breaking his whatever happened to him. Yeah, that was ugly. That was ugly compared to what happened the rest of the season for SMU, especially. That was like, what the F is going on here? Mm-hmm. That was a disgusting defensive secondary. Yeah, and it got better as the season went on, but it was like every time that Davis would drop back and unleash the ball, you're like, here comes either a touchdown or pass interference. Those are really the only two choices. So, yeah, I remember recording that. That was frustrating as heck, that post-game conversation. Trey, when you look at our defense that grew up and then got injured and grew up again over the season, is there one or maybe two defensive players this year that really impressed you? Not just like an MVP, but somebody you're like, I am so glad that guy is playing defense for TCU.
Yeah, I think honestly the most – he probably – you could argue that he played the best on the defense, but I would say he was the most consistent from game to game was Derek Kindred. Love watching him play, brings big hits, you know, seems to, you know his role, be in the right place. So I think, you know, he is at the top of the list for me. Really liked, you know, Nick Orr. And considering the circumstances, you know, Ty Summers, you know, coming in, you know, having to step in for the injuries and all of that. So those are kind of the players I felt like had a really good year. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Ty Summers play, mm-hmm. You know, the rest of his career at TCU, because he could be, you know, a really good, you know, Tank Carter, Jason Phillips, like those type of linebackers that TCU's had in the past. So I'm really hoping, you know, for big things from him in the future.
Yeah, we got a lot of people coming back on defense like Ty Summers that make me excited to think that this defense is going to be there. I think one of the guys that we're going to miss and we won't realize it until next season is Davian Pearson. Oh, I mean, yeah. That guy just was an anchor for years. And, you know, in some ways he's kind of the quintessential TCU Gary Patterson defensive player, that he was out of Oklahoma. He didn't get offered by OU or OSU. He always played not with the chip on his shoulder, not the cliche, but he just played pissed off, and he knew his job and he did it every single time. And, yeah, he was just a lunch pail kind of guy. Came to work, did his job, you know, knocked the hell out of the quarterback, and you loved it. I mean, we got a lot out of that guy. He really poured his heart out for the Frogs. I'm going to miss Damian Pearson, but all those guys you mentioned I think are going to really be standouts for the Frogs, not only maybe in the bowl game, but for years to come. So, We played 31 freshmen this year, true or redshirt, which has to be some kind of ridiculous record. So, Daniel, when you look about the freshmen, what one or two freshmen made an impact this season that you would think just completely set themselves apart? And what did you see in them that you liked?
Well, it didn't happen until late, but I'd say Ty Summers, you know, thinking back like we just were about the SMU game, I mean, what a... How it's bizarre to think that the defense was that bad. Just it practically wasn't even there. They just kind of got in the way of SMU, and they just kind of had to run around him. But man, watching him play against Baylor, that was insane. I mean, 23 tackles, including the game winner, and that conditions, you know, which was awful. We were all there. I mean, that it to me. I'm still not used to TCU being some sort of offensive powerhouse. But if I had to pick an offensive one, I'd probably go with like Turpin. But I still get excited about big stops and big hits and crushing them and more than scoring. That's just how, you know, that's how it's been for 15 years or so. So I'm more excited about the defense coming back around to where it should be. And I'm excited about where we're headed forward with, you know, all the recruiting that we're getting, being at the level that we're at. So I think I'm excited about Ty Summers.
Yeah, there's a great article that was in the San Antonio Express about him. I think it was yesterday. I think you'll find it on Killer Frogs, about how he was a quarterback in high school, barely played some defense, but was not a standout linebacker. And, you know, he had two power five, you know, he had two offers, Rice. And then TCU came in at the last minute and offered him and ended up coming here. And that is, you know, forgive the cliche, he's a quintessential Gary Patterson recruit that, you know, come in, shift him from one side of the ball to the other, grow him up probably a year too early and a lot, you know, in Patterson's eyes even. And he just goes out there and makes 23 tackles and wins the game against Baylor and ignites the fire of the fan base. So, yeah, you got to love Ty Summers and what he did. Turpin is, I just want to add this, I remember following recruiting last year and somebody posted his highlight tape, and I was just, it's the most ridiculous highlight tape I had ever seen from his senior year in high school, and I thought, you know, if this guy can get on campus and put on a little weight, he's going to make a difference. And he gets on campus and didn't weight anything at all. He just started lighting it up right away. It was really cool to see him do that. So, well, I want to ask you a really awkward question here, Trey. I don't want to make you the Debbie Downer because I know that, you know, I don't want to label you here. Was this season a disappointment?
It's hard. You know, I go back and forth. Sitting here right now, it doesn't feel like a disappointing season. But, you know, if you would have told me back in September before the season starts how this whole thing plays out, you know, if you just tell me, hey, TCU ends 10-2 and they go to the Alamo Bowl, I probably would have been disappointed. But, you know, if you tell me TCU goes 10-2, has to play all these freshmen, have all these injury problems, you know, Boykin misses time, Dotson misses time, if you tell me all of that, then, you know, my opinion changes. And so when I look at it, yeah, I'm disappointed. There was high hopes for this season, but you know, one, going undefeated is hard to do. I mean, it was hard for TCU to do when they were in the Mountain West Conference. And, I mean, yeah, that was a good conference, but it's not this Big 12 conference. This conference is much better. So that's hard to do in and of itself. And then to have it derailed by, you know, the injuries, you know, it is what it is in the sport. So, yeah, I'm kind of sitting on the fence. Yes, it was disappointing, but no, I really don't feel that disappointed sitting here right now.
Yeah, that is a tough call because, you know, like you said, if we'd have been told this at the beginning of the season, we'd have been like, oh, crap. But, you know, all things considered.
Yeah, you would have definitely said yes.
Yeah. I think the thing I'm most disappointed for is the players. I mean, like, you know, he doesn't need my sympathy with his salary, but I'm really disappointed for Coach Patterson, to be totally honest. I mean, like, that guy deserves a national championship. He is one of the top five coaches in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And to see it not spoiled by scheme or being outplayed, but just seeing it spoiled by something as random as this ridiculous amount of injuries, it bothers me. You know, I don't want to be like all emotionally and emo invested in sports, but it bothers me that this guy that does so freaking much for our school and got us to this place, if, you know, preseason that was not hype, to see that, you know, he played 31 freshmen and redshirt freshmen and still goes 10-2. And I'm like, and all we can think of is what might have been. So, oh, that's the tough part. And I feel bad for Boykin too, because he deserves an invite to New York and he deserves all the acclaim. So, well, Daniel, when you think about the preseason expectations, you know, how is the season not a disappointment? Put the best spin on this year for everybody and for all of our listeners.
I think in a lot of ways it's a triumph, based because of what they were able to do despite the just what seemed to be insurmountable. I mean, it seemed like we were toast. Yeah, we were able to score, but if SMU and Stephen F. Austin and stuff could put up that kind of points on us, it wasn't going to be good. And what they were able to do, and you know, and I'm glad Baylor was at the end of the season because we were able to coach guys up and get them ready to play. But it just speaks volumes for, you know, Gary Patterson and everybody he's got on staff of what they can take with a bunch of freshmen and walk-ons. And, you know, churn out a 10-win season, losing to only two really good teams, you know, in a top conference. That's incredible. So I really don't see it as that much of a disappointment. I mean, it as far as how we felt preseason as opposed to what it turned out to be, yeah, I can see that. But you can't control the circumstances pretty much, so I really think that in a lot of ways it's probably as good as you could ask for and just a testament to what TCU's got going for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It says everything about what this program is and how far Coach Patterson has brought us as a program, as the players, and as depth. I mean, you know, every freshman's going to feel rough the first three or four games, but to see those freshmen thriving at the end of the year, you have to think we exceeded expectations. I love your phrase. That is a triumph for the season to be 10-2, and to be in the place that we are. We have a chance to have another top 10 finish, which would be our fifth top 10 finish in the last 8 years. That's amazing. That is amazing. Well, last question we have here, Trey, is for you. We've been in the Big 12 for 4 years now, and it was such a big deal to make that move from, you know, the long journey of the Southwest Conference to the WAC, to the small WAC, to Conference USA, to the Mountain West, you know, to the Big East for a cup of coffee, and then into the Big 12. After 4 years, have we exceeded expectations? Have we met expectations? Have we not met expectations? What's your summary of TCU after four seasons in the Big 12?
I think you definitely say they exceeded expectations, because if you would have asked anybody, even the most dedicated TCU fans, I don't think they even would have predicted us, you know, winning the conference as quickly as the Frogs did, and then putting together, you know, back-to-back seasons like this. You know, it started off a little rough, but, you know, they look good, and I didn't think that they would get to this point. You know, I definitely thought that TCU would eventually get, you know, good, be at the top of this conference, compete, you know, week in and week out. But I thought it would take a little bit longer, maybe 4 years, you know, get a full, you know, 4 year cycle in here. But they've definitely exceeded my expectations. And I think it shocks a lot of people if they want to admit it or not. And that's TCU fans or non-TCU fans, because there was a lot of, I hate the word haters, but, you know, people that were negative and, you know, didn't really respect what TCU was doing and thought, you know, their winning in those conference didn't really mean that much, because, you know, you just have to get up for one or two big games a year. But they've came out strong, and I mean, I think they're not going anywhere either. You know, Daniel mentioned recruiting. It continues to pick up, you know, and so I think, you know, TCU is definitely trending in the right direction in my eyes.
Yeah, that first season where we went 7-5 and lost the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl against Michigan State. And honestly, I thought that's kind of the program we're going to be. We're going to go to bowl games every now and then. We're going to bump up to 9 or 10 wins. And, you know, if we ever catch lightning in a fire, you know, catch lightning in a bottle sometime, we might be able to compete for the title. But I'll tell you what, man, that off season between 13 and 14 was the longest, you know, 8 or 9 months of my life. And when we were 4-8 and just getting lost all of those close games and just listening to everybody dog on us. And basically ever since we hired Meacham and Cumby and Patterson was willing to roll the dice on the spread, you know, what are we 20-21-3 at the moment from that. We got 10-2 this year. We're 12-1 last year. We're 22-3. We're in a great spot going forward. So I guess that kind of leads us to our last two awkward questions here. Internet rumors are never true, of course, but we do know that Sonny Cumby is interviewing with Charlie Strong to be the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach and be handed the keys to the offense in Austin. Those two guys, Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumby, have helped single-handedly turn our offense around and in that turn our program around to get us to the spot that that we've been talking about all season. I don't want to break down whether he should take the job or not. That's his decision, and it's not ours. But what do we do if he ends up taking the job, and what impact do you think that's going to have on our program? I'll leave it to either one of you guys. Both of y'all want to chime in. What do you think is the impact of Sonny Cumby potentially going to University of Texas?
I think it sucks because, number one, he was responsible for so much in these last 2 years, and now that is going to go down to the competition, who can pretty much get almost any recruit they want. They get talent all the time. And, you know, if they turn it around, great. I mean, great in a bad way. That sucks because then they're just going to be that much better. And of course, we lost him. But I think the recruiting aspect, he's a fantastic recruiter. And the momentum that we have in recruiting, I think that would just really suck.
I am a little bit torn. I like Cumby. I think he's a really good coordinator and could, you know, be a good coordinator at Texas or anywhere else he decided to go, and maybe even a really good head coach someday. But when I look at it now, you know, Doug Meacham's the one calling the plays. Cumby, you know, hasn't really had experience calling plays before. So, you know, having them both as a team together is great. I hate that, you know, we had to break them up because, you know, we all knew this was coming. Eventually we weren't going to be able to keep both of them. I'm just torn on which one. I don't know which one's more important. You know, Meacham calls the plays and kind of runs the offense. Cumby, like Daniel mentioned, is really good with recruiting, developing quarterbacks, you know, all of that. So, it's tough. All I know is we can't really afford to lose both. It's weird, I guess, the whole Meacham thing, you know, with going to UNT, that kind of heated up and then died out. So, you know, did TCU say something, you know? Shit, my fire alarm's going off.
All right, Trey. Well, we're going to keep this live. We're going to let you go, buddy. So you go take care of your little boy.
Yeah, let me go see why this is doing this real quick.
That's funny.
That is funny. That is funny. Well, I mean, I hope he's okay.
Unless there's a fire, yeah.
Unless there's a fire, then it's not funny. So we can literally say our podcast is on fire now.
There you go.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, you got any thoughts on all that? Anything else you wanted to add, Daniel?
There's been some rumors also that, you know, Coach Looper might go with him, and I don't know if there's any basis in that, but you know, like maybe there's going to be, you know, just they're going to be starting to clean house on the offensive side down at Texas, and then, you know, they might say, come on in, bring who you want, and things like that. That would kill recruiting because those are our biggest recruiters, as far as I know. But I don't know. Cumby really likes it here. There's non-monetary aspects that he really appreciates that he gets here, and I don't think you would get that kind of stuff, you know, at a big red tape type of institution like that with a bunch of, you know, big wigs and politics and all that mess. And personally, it wouldn't be worth it for $5 million a year for me, if I was in that position.
And he's never even called plays. I'd really be surprised if Texas is going to come in and just hire somebody to take over the entire offense, and he's never called a game. That's, and he's 34. He's not, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm back, guys.
Oh, okay. Is your house on fire, buddy? Is your family safe?
Yeah, I guess it was the heater that set it off or whatever. But real quick, y'all might have discussed it.
But, seats, man. I love it.
There's a part of me that's like, why doesn't TCU just step up and be like, okay, well, we'll offer you $1.2 million. I mean, like, do we have the money to do that, right? I mean, I don't think the program's hurting. Like, why not step up? And, I mean, I guess you would have to offer both of them. I don't know. I just feel like it's time to step up. We're in the Big 12 now. I mean, we're a national program. Like you said, we're about to finish potentially in the top 10, you know, once again. So why don't we step up to the plate and play like the big dogs do?
Yeah, I will just add this, because I heard Chris Del Conte say this last year on one of the Killer Frogs interviews, where he said, if you want me to pony up and keep these coordinators, don't complain when the price of tickets go up. So as long as everybody's okay with paying an extra $10 a year for your seat next year, or, you know, an extra $100 a year, that's just kind of the price of doing business down here in Big 12 country, in the arms race that is keeping the good assistant coaches. So by the time you listen to this, this all might be over. So, you know, we might have Cumbie announcing that he's staying. We might have Cumbie announcing that he's leaving. But this is one of those situations where the cliche is true. I'm going to trust Gary Patterson to figure this stuff out. So
if they would sell beer, they could pay him whatever he wanted.
Oh, yeah, man. Sell beer, man. I got tired of watching people pull whiskey flasks out of the pocket at the game against Baylor, man. Just sell beer. Oh, my gosh. Just sell beer. So
they have it in the club or whatever.
Yes. But yes. If you're really rich, it's okay to be totally loaded at the game. Yes. But just middle class drunk people are not acceptable. So, well, I want to give you guys a closing question here. We're wrapping up the regular season. I know we're going to lay out some podcasts moving up to the bowl game, post-bowl game, recruiting, offseason, and all that. But this kind of bookends the very first show that we did about a week and a half before the Minnesota game. So I just want to ask you, we'll start with you, Trey, as long as your house isn't burning down.
We're still standing.
We're still standing. Okay, good, good. What did you love about doing this? We kind of started this damn thing on the fly, and as we kind of joked, we don't know each other, really. We never interacted. We never met. We just said, let's start a podcast and meet every Sunday night and record it and put it online Monday morning. What did you love about doing this?
Just, you know, it's kind of an outlet to vent, to discuss TCU football, to, you know, have people listen. And, you know, we get feedback on Twitter comments and all that type of stuff. So I just think it's a fun way to, you know, get excitement or frustration out and interact, you know, just in a different way, you know, with other TCU fans. You know, you've got Twitter, you got message boards, now we got this podcast. So it's just another way to, you know, do all those things. And so I enjoyed it and thought it was a really good time.
Yeah, it was. Daniel, you were the first person that said, yes, I can help make this thing happen. He's literally the one that turns the keys on online that I don't know anything about to make this happen. What did you love about doing this podcast?
Well, it's fun. I mean, it's my passion, so I'm basically talking about it most of the time anyway. And, you know, I think the reason you had brought it up on Killer Frogs before I ever mentioned it, but I remember last year, I may have said this before, that after the West Virginia game, I was so pumped that after such a stressful game that we won, and then I was listening to the radio because I was in the car, and then the broadcast was over, and I was like, dang it, I need more content. I need to talk about this more. And it made me think, I wish there was like a podcast or something that I could listen to, because I just need more to talk. I need more of this. And so that's when it kind of first hit my mind, but I didn't think I knew enough to talk about one on my own, but then you had mentioned it, and I thought, this is perfect. And it's been a blast, and I think it's just really cool to do, and I'm happy to do it. I'm happy that we have as many listeners as we do. I think we got some new countries today. I can't remember, but, it, you know, keeping track of people all over the world, it's really fun.
Yeah, when I told my wife I was going to do this, her first comment was, it's about time you have somebody other than me to talk to about all of this stuff. So she could officially care less about all of this. So, yeah, it's like you said, it's what I want to talk about anyway. And, you know, living in Big Ten country, they don't – these people still tell me that the Big 12 doesn't know how to play defense because I tried to explain to them it's about points per possession and not just points per game, and their eyes kind of glazed over. And they were so excited about the TCU-Baylor game because there were lots of punts in that. And so just being able to be with fellow Frogs and talk about, you know, this style of game that we love and this team that we love, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. So we got a long way to go, but I'm really glad that we started this thing, and I'm really glad you guys have listened to it every week. Our listenership continues to grow. And we appreciate everybody that downloads this and listens to it at the treadmill, you know, when they're out cutting the grass. We're really glad that you're here, guys. So, well, we're going to be back on in a couple weeks. We got some special guests that we're working to line up to get ready for the Oregon game, to talk about recruiting, talk about off season, and we got some other special things that are kind of in the pipeline that we'll be telling you about to keep us talking and to keep us thinking about what it means to follow TCU. So, for Trey Fallon and for Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the podcast.